Hey everyone, welcome back to High T Hoops. This is Brian Beauchet at the Duke of Hoops, and we have a really special episode today where I interview Alexis Robinson, the owner of One Brand Agency, where she manages the brands of professional athletes and influencers. Alexis works with clients like D'Erica Hamby and the WNBA and D'Anthony Melton and the NBA, and she shares her knowledge in this interview of how athletes can build their brands to attract sponsors, land more brand deals, and open themselves up to business opportunities. She also discusses a lot of the best practices on how brands can work directly with athletes and influencers. I interviewed her late last year, and she gives some incredible insights that British basketball players can use to grow their audiences, and the entire British basketball community can use to grow the fan base. So I really hope you enjoyed the episode, and here she is. Today, I am so excited to be interviewing and joined by Alexis Robinson, the owner of One Brand Agency. Alexis, how's it going?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're in a pandemic, just trying to survive out here.
It's definitely a weird time, but you know, we're getting through it.
On this podcast, which is definitely more fun, maybe a little bit of an escape for people for some personal growth and learning, wanted to have you on to talk about basically athlete branding, personal branding, influencer branding. You do a lot of incredible work with different athletes and influencers on how they can build their brands. So would just love to start off with a little bit of your background, how you got into this space, how you got into your line of work, and would just love to kind of hear more about your experience here.
Yeah, absolutely. It started, you know, I come from an athlete family. So dad, NBA professional basketball player.
Nice.
I think every, you know, brother, uncle, cousins, everyone in my family all played collegiate professional basketball. So I've always kind of had, when it comes to, you know, management, agents, a publicist and stuff, I've always kind of had those people around in my family, working with someone I'm related to. So I ended up playing collegiate and professional tennis. And
nice, when I saw that.
Yeah, when I was done, I basically was like, well, you know, I don't want to go work for someone. I don't have sort of that ambition. I thought I was going to be a tennis player. So when that was over, I just decided to make the transition over to working with athletes and going, you know, to OU. I would meet football players, and you know, I went to school with some good basketball players, and then I had family that were hoopers at Oklahoma State. So then I met a bunch of football players and basketball players there. So I kind of just figured out throughout my network of people that I knew, I could help expand their marketing reach with the connections to brands and media. So I would just honestly sort of, I wouldn't call it cold calling, but I would just go to some of the athletes that I knew and be like, hey, I know you probably have an agent, but do you have management or do you have marketing? Because there's money and opportunities out here outside of your sport that can last through your playing career and beyond.
Yep.
And that once you sort of convince an athlete that, it becomes really easy. And then in the past like 3 years, the rise of social media and how much money and influence you can create on social media has definitely made it easier for me to get clients. And the brand attachment is what's drawn in, you know, quote unquote social media influencers or Instagram models, or you know, anyone with some good following. They realized, oh, I can capitalize off this too. So they've picked up on it and they've wanted to work with me and stuff. So it's become like a full circle. As far as, you know, like I said, I grew up with people like me around in my life, and now I'm one of those people.
Yeah, it's you see so many stories of people growing up around it in the locker room, seeing kind of professional athletes, and then kind of circling back to it. But for your tennis, I was also a huge tennis player, so played nationals at USTA and everything. What region did you grow up playing in?
Oh, nice. So I was in, I'm pretty sure it's still like Mountain West, like Nevada.
Oh, nice.
Arizona. I was born and raised in Vegas. So okay. I've always played here. I didn't, to be completely honest, it was kind of crazy. I thought I was going to be a basketball player. I I think I lettered probably like 10 times in high school. Like I played, was just always playing. Like I played softball, baseball, tennis, and basketball. So, and obviously just like gene wise, like I really thought I was going to be a basketball player just like everyone else in my family.
Yep.
But I guess like I'm only 5'8", which to, you know, basketball players isn't that tall. And I realized really late in high school, I would just play tennis like on my team for just because my uncle, who is an NBA coach, he actually was one of the, I think he's the only, John Lucas, he's the only player to or person to play professional basketball and tennis at the same time. So I picked up the sport from him. So it was just kind of like him and my grandmother. So it was just kind of me like being good at it. So I decided to play it in high school. And then my senior year of high school, I realized team sports weren't for me at all. And so I was like, oh, I like being alone. I like having control over the outcome and myself and everything like that. So that's when I really picked up tennis. So I didn't even have a lot of chance to play national tournaments and stuff.
And then you went straight to college and played? That's incredible.
I know. Well, I went to a couple of camps going into my senior year when I decided I wanted to be serious about tennis. It was like UC San Diego.
Yep.
They did a Nike camp. I went to one at Bollettieri.
Yep.
And then I think I forget where the other one was. It was probably in like Phoenix, somewhere close, drivable. And I ended up like getting MVP of the one at UCSD. And I got like, you know, all team at Bollettieri and everything like that. So that's when I was like, oh shoot, like I could probably do this at the next level. I didn't realize that I was, you know, as good as I was. So I had such a good time at Bollettieri that I was like, I'm just going to get a coach and, you know, be the next arena, just like go on tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like came the year went by, I had a great senior year. And then my mom was like, I really want you to go to college. And I was like, I'm not going to college. Like I'm going pro. You should be happy for me. And then she basically cried her eyes out and was like, I really want my daughter to go to college. And so the only school at the time that still had a scholarship for me was a small, they're in the WAC conference, Dixie State in St. George, Utah. And there was another one in Colorado that I also had a scholarship still available to, but the one Dixie State, they played like BYU Hawaii and like a bunch of schools in Hawaii. Yep. So I knew I would get to go to Hawaii for free.
Yeah.
So I just chose that school to start out with after and then after 2 years I ended up meeting my tennis coach. My pro coach in George, his name was Vic Braden.
I know Vic Braden.
So Vic had a tennis academy out in St. George.
Yep.
So him and Andy Fitzell, who was my main coach, his sort of mentee, they took me on. They kind of just saw something in me past my team, because we would actually practice at his academy.
Yep.
And so I started doing private lessons and camps with them and training. I was playing doubles with one of their players that they had come in from Vietnam. She was the number one tennis player in Vietnam, so she could like get us bids in the tournaments and stuff like that. So it was kind of just like a whirlwind, definitely not the normal tennis experience. I definitely lucked into a lot of it, but you know, it was cool. I was left, you know, I'm left-handed, I have a good serve, and I'm fast, so I would love to. I was just like total John McEnroe, like I was just serving volley. It took me places.
Yeah, it seems like that's a lot healthier, because I was the tennis kid that trained at academies like from age 6. So I was Southern California, you know, in that conference, and then in Intermountain. So I played in Vegas all the time. All of our Intermountain tournaments were there at the Augusti, you know, their big tennis camp there. I played at Vic Braden's tennis academy a bunch for tournaments, but I got totally burnt out, because I was full-time actually at academies too in Southern California.
at Advantage, and it's so tiring. I would have gone into it a little bit later and just enjoyed the fun of it. But yeah, it's tennis is a grueling sport.
Yeah, it's such a, like an in between. It's like you want to find that in between, because there's like that part that, you know, my mom, because I had like a decent, for me, I had a decent pro stint. Like I got to play some really cool tournaments doubles wise and made a little bit of money, and I got to travel and do some really cool things. So there's that part where I'm satisfied, but my mom's like, if you were like a pro with the little effort and the time, like imagine if you would have started with academies when you were like yep. 8, like everyone else. And I'm like,
going pro at 14, like Steffi Graf, and winning tournaments at 13. Yeah. But going back to kind of the athlete branding, can you define kind of what athlete branding is? Cause this is a pretty new category, like you said. So kind of like how can people think about what this type of marketing or what this type of branding even is?
Yeah. Athlete branding is basically convincing an athlete and then convincing the brand, but it's, you want athletes to become recognizable outside of their sport. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to athlete branding, some of the top ones that, you know, I can think of, it's like Bryce Harper. I don't watch baseball. I've never been a fan. Bryce is from here, and you know, I grew up with Bryce and have been around him and his family, and you know, we have the same friends, hung out, all this other stuff, like our entire young adult life and young life. And I didn't realize who it was until I stepped into this space, and I'm like, wow, I know people in basketball or people that are live out of the country and things like that that have no interest in baseball and aren't from Vegas, but they know Bryce Harper and they yep. know that he's from Vegas, you know? So he's implemented a brand for himself. Like he's very proud of where he's from. So he's added that into his branding, and he's become so commercial and marketable that it doesn't really matter what he does in the sport. Thank goodness he's been able to excel in the sport, yep. but you have a lot of athletes that have great brands who haven't done huge things in their sports. And that's because they have someone like me or me pushing that out of them. Because, you know, when you're done, you know, playing the sport, hopefully you want and are going after the opportunities out there.
Yeah, maybe one of the few baseball players that actually does good personal branding. I know that's yeah. a huge problem. But like if Mike Trout walked into a room, could you actually identify who he was? Or if you were a normal American, maybe right. not. But yeah, that's a great, and just like for the basics, what are some of the goals of athlete branding? So if we get down to is like brand sponsorships, social following, what are some of the things that you're trying to accomplish with this athlete branding?
I think the big thing is brand sponsorships, obviously, you know, money talks. So that's the big thing. And also, I wouldn't say social media following, but I would say your reach. I have clients who don't have a ton of follow. One of my WNBA clients, De'Erica Hamby, she was sixth woman last year.
Yep.
And since then she's, you know, I've forced her like, hey, market brand yourself. And the reason I've done that is because the WNBA they don't do a great job of branding their athletes. You know, everyone can maybe name like 3 or 4 WNBA players if they're not a fan, and it's the same one: Sue Bird, Taurasi, Deladon, Candace Parker, you know? And so I was adamant with De'Erica. I was like, you need to create a brand for yourself because you are one of the top players in this league. You play for one of the best teams. You play for a team that has other marketable assets to them. So, and you play in Vegas. You're one of the two professional sports teams that we have here. So, you know, let's step outside the box. And she's done a great job of that. Has her social media, and, you know, she only has, you know, 40, 50,000 followers, but her reach is insane. Like I have people who, you know, because she's a mom, and she brought her daughter out to the bubble, and so she's doing full-time mom yes. and full-time basketball. And so I've had, you know, my mom and some of her friends mentioned D'Erica and her article that was in Essence, or seeing her daughter on ESPN, like blowing a kiss to mommy, you know? So I've had people who aren't WNBA and basketball fans recognize D'Erica for her parenting outside of her basketball. So I think like your reach is one of the big goals, because if you can do that, it's easy to get the other goal, which is the sponsorship.
Yeah, and riding off her momentum, where she had one of the most electric shots I've ever seen in basketball last year in the WNBA playoffs, even if it was a tad early in the shot clock.
Yeah, that was so crazy being there in person, because I was I unfortunately, coming from a basketball family, I should be more of a WNBA and women's basketball fan, but I wasn't until D'Erica and I became friends. Mm-hmm. It was me going to every game locally and loved it. But I've never been more shook, excited, like lost for air, everything than I was at that game. And
it was insane.
It was insane. But it also made me like on, you know, the manager side, that's always thinking, I'm like, okay, WNBA, like, these games are lit. Like, people need to get into this sport, because This is the funnest I've had at a basketball game.
Yeah. I mean, with those like bang, bang plays where it's just like, okay, got the steal, running back, don't really know how much time is left, throw it up, get to the next round. Just, it was unbelievable. And you're right. In the wobble this year, you know, I love the babies in the wobble, by the way. It's just on both sides. The NBA just let them in too with the families, where like Candace Parker and, you know, the women have had them in the bubble, the wobble, for pretty much the whole time. But it really, like, you know, we had Ari Chambers on, and she's like, invest in these personalities. Like, if you're wanting to get into the WNBA, if you're wanting to get into these sports, invest in the personalities, because these women are amazing. These athletes are amazing as people. And you're right. Like, if their play doesn't go as well, or maybe they don't live up to all the hype, like, people still will invest and follow those personalities, even above the level of play.
Yeah. I mean, I think D'Erica has definitely gotten herself there. And the thing is surprising. A lot of people don't know, D'Erica doesn't even start, you know? Mm-hmm. And people thought after that shot last year, after being sixth woman this year, and with Liz and Kelsey being out, they're like, oh, she's for sure going to move to the starting lineup, and all. She still doesn't start. So for her to have the kind of brand that she's been able to create coming off the bench for a WNBA team is incredible. And so that I told her, you know, that's something that you should be proud of, that people know your name regardless of you being of them being a WNBA fan, and you coming, you're not even in the starting five. Like, that's definitely an accomplishment and a goal that you know, she's been able to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, top 200 woman in the world in basketball. Like, yeah. Even if you're coming off the bench in the WNBA, that's an incredible achievement. And to go kind of into the different elements that go into kind of these, the athletes and kind of how you brand it, what are some of the things that you find are most important when they're trying to build that reach? You know, you mentioned a little bit about them, you know, building the awareness of them off the court, but what are some of the most important factors that you'll kind of build into their brands as you're working with your different clients?
Consistency and content creation are probably like the biggest things, but they're also the biggest obstacles. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they're not used to realizing that, you know, creating photos and videos of themselves and doing it, if not daily, then like, you know, almost every other day, weekly, whatever, it's definitely not something that they're used to.
Yeah.
So that's like always been the biggest thing with my athletes, like trying to convince them, like, if you just create the content and create it consistently, I promise you it's going to come back tenfold. Cause not only, it's just a ladder effect as far as social media, you know, the more you post, the more followers you get. That's just normal. But with brands and possible sponsorship deals, it's like, okay, well, if they see that you can create this sort of content and you can do it consistently, that drives them to want to work with you, because they'll get their return of investment.
Do you have like a game plan for them to create content? Like I do a lot of TikTok videos. I'll try to create, but there's a big learning curve to getting good at creating content. Do you have like a game plan for them? Is there a training? Like how could you help them produce more content or at least better content?
Yeah, no, I individualize like each client. So if I have, you know, I have some influencers here in Vegas, I have some in Phoenix, I have, you know, De'Erica, she's in the Wubble, things like that. But De'Erica, you know, they ended up bringing out the photography person for the Aces, ended up going out to the Wubble with them. So, you know, we had a conversation with him ahead of time, like, hey, just make sure, you know, if De'Erica feels like getting ready today, or if we have like a brand sponsored post that we need, you know, if you could do us a solid, like, please let us know. So I always have individualized sort of creation, like, I don't know, it's like my craziness in my head, but I try and put it into like text/Slack format for the people that I'm working with, but it's always individualized. And I've partnered with some really great content creators, like some of the best photographers and videographers out there. And then I also have, you know, some people that if they can't get with someone that I recommend, they, you know, will create the content themselves. I'm like, look, if we need to get a ring light and a self timer stand out to you, like, we will go ahead and do it. And then I know someone who's really good at editing photos. So then that way we can just make sure the content is great. All you have to do is do the bare minimum, put the self timer on and take a photo. So it's definitely individualized, and it definitely takes like a strategic plan cater to each client, but that's what, you know, that's my job. So I definitely take the time to figure that out for them.
Yeah. I can only imagine when they're just not doing it and you're like, come on. And that's pretty common in a lot of businesses where you ask, you know, maybe it's the, you know, the subject matter expert needs to record something for you and it's not their full-time job, but you need it for your marketing plan. What do you do? What are some of your strategies when they just like aren't consistently posting or they're just not doing it up to the level that you need them to?
Well, luckily I don't run into that problem a lot because okay. Like I said, I'm a little bit like, I'm on
make it
them
as easy as possible
all the time.
Yeah.
But I will say like De'Erica is probably the one that I have the most trouble with as far as creating content. But the thing is that like De'Erica and I laugh it off because, you know, I sat down with Kelsey Plum, one of her teammates, about working with her and possibly doing some campaigns with her. And Kelsey even laughed. She's like, yeah, De'Erica told me, you know, she's not very good at this, but I'm ready. I'm ready to go. So
yeah.
If you have any campaigns for me, like, don't hesitate to ask. So it's funny. So De'Erica's probably like the only one that I usually have an issue with. And I don't know why. I don't know if she's shy or if she, you know.
Yeah.
I will say she's kind of a perfectionist. So maybe that's why. So like doing it in the Wubble, even though, you know, she has the resources, I think she's just like trying to just play well, get in, get out, you know, they're in that tough environment and they're at IMG and I'm like, oh, I went to IMG, you know, so for tennis, it's you know, not the most ideal place. So, we laugh about it, but other than that, usually my clients, they don't really have trouble because at the end of the day, like this is how you make money, you know?
Yep.
So, everyone's replaceable. At the end of the day, it's really easy to find someone who is good looking and has a lot of followers. I've realized that because a good chunk of influencers daily inquire about being clients of mine. So I think when they realize that, and I'm sure everyone during this quarantine has seeing that people are just sort of, you know, some influencers are kind of just shoving content, you know,
there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. So exactly. So I'm like, look, you know, you can take advantage of this opportunity or there's someone else who will. And I think that's definitely something that my clients understand.
Yeah. It's definitely hard to break through and get used to having yourself on camera, even listening to your own voice. If you have to listen to those back, if you're uncomfortable there, but yeah, especially with social media, it feels like people are a lot more comfortable producing. But you know, you've seen some really good examples of athletes doing this, you know, some from the NBA bubble where Matisse is starting the vlog, JaVale McGee is starting the vlog, and they're doing like incredible production work themselves. What do you think, you know, that's a great example of a brand can see that and go, okay, this person can create good content consistently. That's really engaging for their audience. What are some of the things that you see brands really wanting when they're working with athletes? Are there kind of a top three thing that they look at before they start working with you, or interest in working with the different athletes?
Yeah, I think definitely the top three things would be like your engagement.
Mm-hmm. So they're looking at the social profiles and being like, all right, how much engagement do they get per post and things like that?
Yeah, that's why as far as like the following, they don't really care. But if they see a lot of eyes on it, that's definitely more important to the brands. The media reach is another one that's more important to the brands. So even if you're like an influencer and you don't want press from, you know, our company, I recommend it, even if it's just for 60 to 90 days, because in that 60 to 90 days, I can get you on the top, you know, ESPN or Essence Magazine, you know, all these things. So that way, when a brand is like, oh, I might not know who D'Anthony Melton or D'Erica Hamby is, but they Google and they see, you know, a list of things, they're like, okay, well, at least if I work with them, if I partner with them, they people will pay attention. That's all, you know, at the end of the day, it's who, you know, that's how, whoever's more popular outside of the actual following number, whoever can prove that popularity through media, through engagement, is how they're going to get their return of sales, or, you know, their return of investment, aka sales, which is what leads them to want to work with someone.
Got it. So engagement's the big one. Any other big ones? Is like professionalism one? Like, is it like repeat working with someone just because of how they are working with the brand, or kind of what can athletes do to attract them? Yeah.
It can be, but the thing is that I will say, and I know sometimes there are influencers and or athletes who say that they can do it all, but I can say personally that you should have management / branding in any sort of capacity if you're a public figure, because what you just asked usually comes from a company. So I've had
you handle that side.
Yeah, I have like four or five brands that I work religiously with, paid deals, and I'll throw them a client that they've probably never heard of, but because our relationship is so good and they know that I'm going to come through, they'll do it just off of that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's probably like the biggest thing. The loyalty usually comes from a company. And if it's not like a management company, it could just be like an agency, you know? There are, you know, a lot of companies that I'm sure see a Clutch client and are like, we're going to work with them just because it's Clutch, you know, and we know we'll get some sort of branding off of Rich Paul and LeBron, you know. So usually in that capacity, the loyalty comes from working with someone, you know, some sort of company, because you can reach out as an athlete yourself and it's really hit or miss, and you might create great content and you might not have even known that your following isn't a following that will purchase certain products. You know, I do that research for each of my clients. I know the type of brands that D'Erica should work with. I know the type of brands that D'Anthony should have worked with, or, you know, any sort of thing. So that's like the big thing when it comes to the loyalty with the brands. They usually are looking for these companies, whether it be an agency or a management company, first before they even look at the athlete and or influencer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You're the barrier, you're the professional barrier between where you can handle that for the athlete. When the athlete, you know, I guess it's like, what has changed over the last 20 years? There's so many more social movements, and personal brands are so much more centered around what you stand for and who you are. Are you finding that kind of brands are attracted to athletes who take a stand for different issues outside of the sport? And is that becoming a more important element? are there any other kind of trends you see where athletes can really stand out outside of maybe just what they're doing on, you know, in the, on the field, on the court, anything like that?
Yeah, I think especially during this time, you've seen a huge social justice push in brands and in the athletes. And I think the brands that are able to, you know, not shy away from that and have been able to partner with athletes have done well, you know, just over this COVID time. So I think the way to keep a campaign, a sponsorship campaign, organic, and the way for it to do the best is to align with athletes that have a story to tell and that have some sort of interest. You know, I don't have any influencer. I mean, granted, maybe just the right dollar amount hasn't hit yet, but I don't have any influencer or athlete who has ever been like, yes, I'm going to take that deal, and it not been something that they use, that they wear, that they love, that they enjoy. It's just, you can tell nowadays who posts or who attaches themselves to brands just for the dollar figure instead of the actual likeness of the product. So yep. I think with the brands taking the time to find that organic storytelling and liking of the connection between the athlete and the brand is the best way to increase sales. And, you know, Natasha Cloud, I think, yeah, Natasha Cloud with Converse, her being the first, she was the first Converse basketball female athlete. They used to only have Kelly Oubre on the roster. Then they recently got Draymond Green, and then they got her, and she's the only female. And they really got behind her with the social justice push that she's been making, the opt out of the season in order to spend time and focus on her initiatives with social justice change and everything like that. So I think not only did that drive sales to Converse Hoops, that drew eyes that didn't even know that Converse had a basketball element to them. Because a lot of people didn't know that, even though they did have Kelly and Draymond. If you're not a basketball fan, it's hard to, you know, I think Draymond is like a basketball athlete for them. And I think Kelly is like
a the fashion, model, the fits
Brit fashion. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. The top fits guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's that to them. And then to bring a female on, but to have her, you know, be a recent WNBA champion, and then to be an advocate for Black athletes, for Black Americans, for, you know, the LGBTQ community, everything like that. So I think for her to have all of that in one, for them to have all of that in one athlete, they've definitely seen a spike and just in sales. And like I said, have gotten people to realize that Converse had a basketball division.
Yeah, which is crazy after The Last Dance was released this summer, where I'm a 90s baby. So looking at Converse as the dominant basketball player, I was like, what? Like, how can Nike take them over so much? And yeah, you see them start to work their way back into the market here. But yeah, it's been fascinating to see, because I'm like, ooh, is Converse cool again?
I think they are.
I think they're getting pretty cool. So in your experience, what are some tips you have for the brands, you know, because they can also, you know, fuck things up a lot too with the athletes and ruin those relationships or not do things particularly well. So do you have some best practices for the brands themselves on how to better work with athletes?
Yes. First, always go
the definitive yes. Yeah. I absolutely
always
do.
Always go through, whether it be a manager or an agent, always go through them. Never try to make the connection with the athlete. 9 times out of 10, that doesn't work, because one, athletes don't usually want to be bothered anyway. And two, they're still, especially right now, times are crazy. There's this COVID situation. There's everything that's going on with social justice. You know, there's a lot happening, and everyone's opinions are different. And to avoid, managers slash agents are really good at separating the two. Brands, to an athlete won't be. It just, it won't happen. There will always be some sort of, the second someone states an opinion and it's not something that either the athlete agrees on, or maybe it's vice versa, like it ends up bad. So communicate through, you know, basically quote unquote the escrow, you know, that's because that's what a manager or an agent is, you know. So communicate through that, because that will avoid drama. Because I already know there's tons of brands out here that might not care about the killing of George Floyd, or, you know, people that are head of influencer relations at, you know, I don't want to name a company because I don't know if they actually are, but you know, there could be a random company where the vice president of marketing or head of influencer relations is, you know, a Donald Trump supporter and doesn't care about anything that these athletes are talking about and wants them to shut up and dribble, you know, like it really could, those people exist, you know, but if they're not letting the athlete know who they are, it makes things easier. So, so like
work with the escrow, work with the management, not directly with the athlete. Yeah. That's great advice.
Yes. That's probably the number one thing. And then the number two thing that I've seen lately is come up with some originality when it comes to who you're working with. I even said it today. I've seen so many brands that are doing campaigns with the same athletes and influencers, and it's not making, I am a serial online / Instagram shopper, you know, I see something that I can click and buy it, I will buy it, you know, like I'm one of those. And I'm seeing the same people attached to some of these brands, and I'm like, I'm over it. I don't want to purchase product from this person, you know? So that's the big thing, is these brands have got it. You got time. No one's doing anything right now. So do the research and find out, like, some of these micro influencers, like, it might not even be about a lot of followers. I will say, you know, Kim Kardashian, she's all about her money. She's all about marketing and everything. I have a client who just did a Skims campaign with her loungewear line, and they found her off of Instagram and reached out to us about doing a campaign, and now she's on a billboard in New York City.
I saw that on your Twitter. It's amazing.
Yeah, so all these things have happened to her, but that was the social team at Skims were literally looking through tagged, I'm assuming, but I know it's how, because that's how they found her. You know, they're looking through tagged profiles of people who genuinely wear Skims and buy it, and they're like, oh, okay, so she loves our product, she tagged us in the brand, and then they click on her page and they see, oh wait, this girl's actually a model, she's an influencer, oh, she has a lot of followers, oh, her photos outside of just the one she did for us are really, really pretty. And they DM'd her and asked for her contact information of her team about doing a shoot. And that's how it all started. So, you know, that, and her campaign has been everywhere. Like, I didn't even know that we were going to get mentioned in Elle and in People and all these other things. And, and that's why I will say, like, Kim and her team took the time to do their diligence to not just, you know, Kim Kardashian, she's got five sisters. She could have easily been like, you know what, all you guys put on some Skims and do a photo shoot.
But they did the work.
You know, but she made it a point to influencers to represent her brand. So that's what I think the brands need to spend their time doing, is don't just shove the same people down our throats. We want to see something different. And I know the sales from that Skims campaign are probably through the roof, because not only did they have different types of influencers, they had different body types. They had different color women who were doing it, you know, all different shapes, sizes, and colors. So that's like the big thing, because the reason I buy stuff on the internet is because I'll be like, oh, okay, I think that fits my body type, or, oh, this looks like something for tennis people, you know, because I'm a tennis fan. I'm not necessarily a basketball fan when it comes to product and like clothing, you know? So like things like that. It's catering towards every type of audience is the way that you can get these people to buy stuff, because the attention span is very, very small these days, you know? Yep. So it's like, if you just do your diligence and find people that can fit everyone's type, it would make things so much better.
You're right. Yeah. The refresh rate of people, especially now when everyone's just at home or just stuck scrolling through, you're seeing the same things a lot more than you typically would. So you want personalized and fresh faces, fresh things to look at every single time, which can make it a lot more powerful for the brand. And that makes a lot of sense. It's pretty amazing to see that, like, that she's tagging it. This is good feedback for individual creators and influencers too, where just keep tagging, keep, you know, getting yourself visibility, because you can be found like that, which that's a pretty amazing story to hear.
Yeah. And that's the thing is I've told her, you know, just if you're going somewhere and you got to get dressed up anyway, I know it sounds crazy, but whoever it is, ask, like, if you're around someone, make them snap a photo of you. If they can't, put your self timer on and snap a photo. If you stay consistent and if you tag the brands that you're already a fan of because you're purchasing product from these people, then it will turn into, oh, now they'll start sending you product. And then they'll be like, oh, well, we're going to start paying you to wear our product because you're doing such a good job showing people that you like our product. And that's honestly how it's been for her. She just got another one of her favorite brands in Chicago. She just signed an ambassador deal with. And I was telling her, I was like, it's because you've decided to, you know, go all in when it comes to content creation and staying consistent with the creation and the post is honestly, it's my advice to any kind of influencer, content creator, micro influencer, public figure, ambassador, or whatever you want to call it. Stay consistent and post, because that's what these brands want to see.
Yep. And just tag them, even if it looks like, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, should I really tag them? Like, does it look thirsty? But no, that's how they find you.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to go ahead.
I was saying, now these brands, you know, they hire social media departments. So you really do have people that are just sitting on their phones or iPads all day looking at where their product is on social media.
Hamby, is there a specific case study you'd like to highlight to kind of take us from start to finish?
Yeah, I think probably, you know, a collab that D'Anthony did with Perry Ellis, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but they're an older brand. They're known for suits.
Yep.
And they're kind of like the country club sort of audience.
I am familiar. I was a tennis player. So yep. In yeah, that target exactly. market. Yep.
So basically, you know, D'Anthony had mentioned he was injured at the beginning of the season. And so we were pretty sure that he was going to have to wear suits on the bench and, you know, when he was traveling and things like that.
And he's an NBA player, for everyone who doesn't know, for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yes. And so he mentioned, hey, I need some suits. And so I was like, okay, I'll reach out to a couple of companies. And being a tennis player, I was like, Perry Ellis. Yeah. So I reached out to the marketing director at Perry Ellis and mentioned that D'Anthony was looking to possibly be gifted. Like, that's it. We just wanted to get a suit that he could, you know, couple jackets, maybe some different ties, you know, just that he could wear during season while he was injured. And they ended up sending him a gift package of not just suits, but they had a poncho in there. They had a couple t-shirts and polos. And so it was cold in Memphis during the winter when the season was started, when the season started. And he ended up wearing the poncho just through the tunnel. And I have, as the manager, I made sure to create a good relationship with his social team at the Grizzlies. So when the tunnel pictures came, I made sure to get them from the social team. I sent them to the marketing director at Perry Ellis. She fell in love. She was so excited. And she mentioned, we're coming out with an athleisure line. This is going to be the first collection through Perry Ellis. And I was so excited because I'm like, well, I work with athletes, so that's perfect. Mm-hmm. So they ended up doing a campaign that initiated during NBA All-Star. I brought one of my basketball influencers. Her name is Casey. She is an NBA and WNBA host, and they ended up doing a great paid campaign with her on site at NBA All-Star.
Wow.
And then throughout the rest of the season, they did a paid deal, monthly deal with D'Anthony to wear the athleisure line during on game days during for, you know, tunnel picks. Mm-hmm. And it was great because D'Anthony actually loved it. He still, they did a few tunnel picks during the Wubble when they were there in the beginning, and I saw him wearing it. So, you know, he loves the athleisure line. So he was excited about the free clothes, but it ended up turning into a paid, loved his content. And the reason they loved his content is because, like I said, I made that connection with the social team, and D'Anthony made that connection with the team photographer. So we always were able to get the content, and then League Fits and all these, you know, all these sites that are pages that promote the outfits and fits that the guys are wearing. He got posted on League Fits a few times. And so Perry Ellis was like, wow, we're getting this, you know, basketball audience that we've never had before. So it ended up being a really great collaboration and partnership. And to this day, it's one of the ones that I'm the most proud of, because it started with D'Anthony just being like, I need a suit. So
yeah. And he didn't have very many partnerships to start with, right? So this is kind of building from the ground up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he was a second round player. It was now his third team that he was a part of in his second year of being in the league. So there was definitely much needed branding that came with him. So
yes,
to do that so early on in us working together, it was great. And honestly, I can say, cause they sent me stuff, so I have some of the athleisure line as well. I do wear it frequently, and people always, when I do tag, they always ask where I got it, or they always are asking about sizing so that they can buy it and make sure, you know, they're like, oh, this is a new brand I've never worn before. I want to make sure I get the sizing right. And so that's the best thing is when you have a collaboration with a brand, and like I said, it's organic, that everyone loves the product, and the brand loves what the content you're creating with the product, and it just ends up just working out for everyone involved.
Yeah, that's I love that case study, because you're right, second round pick, bouncing between teams, needs to build his presence and brand, because, you know, especially for professional athletes, they don't have long in professional sports, and they got to set themselves up for afterward. So it's great to kind of start setting that up and kind of building your own brand. But what do you want to leave this audience with? It could be wisdom, lessons, best practices, what young athletes should be doing. What would be your parting shot that you'd want to leave this audience with?
I'd say my parting shot, especially because I have given this advice out to a couple, I do run high school and AAU basketball tournaments. So I'm, you know, all these top players, some of them who are going into the G League and things like that, I see and get to know very well. And I tell them all, especially now that the NCAA is allowing you to use your brand and your name and things like yep. that, start as early as you can. So take advantage of the leniency that the NCAA is creating. Get started on creating a presence in your social media. If that's, you know, it's kids, so I get it. If it's just social, that's fine. Buy a domain, even if you never use it until you make it to the pros or whatever. Just get your domain now so that you have it. If you have any ideas of merch or anything, trademarks, get all that stuff out of the way really young in life. And if you don't know how to do it, ask someone so that they can tell you how to do it or help you figure out how to do it, because you can start earning money. You can create a brand. You can do all this stuff as soon as now, you know, high school. Look at Dwayne Wade's son, you know, his clothing line.
They start so early.
Yeah, it's blowing up, but he got all his ducks in a row, and then he's just utilizing his social media following by selling merch. So that's the big thing, is create your brand and legally do whatever you need to do. But just remember that you can start as early as 15, 16 years old, and it will make it so much easier as well once you do start your professional career.
Yeah. And it's not, even if you don't turn out to be a professional athlete, it's still incredible, professional development skills that you're growing.
Yeah.
Even for any business, anything. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Alexis. I appreciate the time. I learned a lot, especially as I'm doing my little TikTok influencer thing, trying to grow that brand.
We'll talk about that outside the show as well.
Taking a lot of these lessons, but thank you so much for coming on.
Yes. Thank you for having me. And like I said, we'll talk about the tick, cause I do need some TikTok influencers. So brands are asking about it. So I didn't know. It really is all the rave right now. So, but yeah, thank you for having me, and hopefully I helped a little bit. And if anyone followed one brand agency wherever, and if you're someone who needs an influencer or some brand help, hit me up.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.